The God of Abraham, you know, as we were singing this song, I take the opportunity to say this because from time to time there are questions about the name that we are to call God, and some say only use Yahweh, YHVH. But we talk about the God of Abraham. Abraham called God Adonai. He never, ever once in his entire life called God Yahweh, YHVH. He never, ever did. And that's in Exodus 6. And I thought I'd just point that out to you because this is the only scripture really that you ever need when people start saying, well, yeah, we can't just use a title. Sure, his title is Father or whatever, but his name is Yahweh, if you can pronounce it right, because people can't. So in Exodus 6, you know, I shouldn't start my stopwatch just yet because I'm not into my sermon. But Mr. Pennelly always did. He said, as soon as you open your mouth, that stopwatch starts. The Lord said to Moses, now you shall see what I will do to Pharaoh. Exodus 6 and verse 1. For with a strong hand he will let them go, and with a strong hand he will drive them out of his land. And God spoke to Moses and said to him, I am the Lord. And that's Yahweh is the term there. And God spoke to Moses, I am Yahweh. I appeared to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob as Adonai. If you had the Hebrew here. Adonai, but by my name, Lord, Yahweh, I was not known to them. Now, to me, that is absolutely good enough. I don't know. That's 2,600 years from creation. Now, maybe Adam and Eve, I don't know. But you know that Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. So if the father of the faithful never used the word YHVH, and always was Adonai. That's the name he was known by. By my name, Yahweh, I was not known to them. And to me, that's just good enough. I don't know what people do with that. I don't. And there's other proofs, of course. But anyway, I thought I'd take the opportunity, since we just sang the God of Abraham. It's good to do that. Well, we are, of course, in a period of time with the holy days coming up, with the Feast of Tabernacles coming up, and Day of Atonement before then, that would be a period called the Time of the End. And so today, the title of my sermon is actually the Time of the End, but it's in sequence with the beast as far as the Time of the End. We're going to follow the beast at the Time of the End to see when the time of the end will be. The apostles, disciples, actually throughout all history, no doubt, have asked that question. Because if the disciples ask it in the first century, then in the second century they were asking it. In the third century they were asking it. And no matter when we've been called as Christians, we have been interested in the return of Jesus Christ. That's just a natural. When is Christ going to come? And it shows that we do want Jesus Christ to appear. And so all Christians from time immemorial have been asking, when is the time of the end? In Matthew 23, chapter 24, that is, in verse 3, chapter 24, in verse 3, we see when Jesus Christ was there with his disciples at the temple site, they ask a question. Verse 1 says that they departed from the temple, and his disciples came to show him the buildings of the temple. And Jesus said, do you not see all of these things? Assuredly, I say to you, not one stone shall be left here upon another that shall not be thrown down. And then in verse 3, now as he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately because they had just come from the temple. He had just made this statement. And he said, basically, this temple is going to be destroyed. And now they want to know when. When is this going to happen? Tell us, when will these things be, and what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age? So they want to know, when is that temple going to be destroyed? And not only that they're thinking about the end of the age. Now, we know that that temple was destroyed in 69 AD, basically. And I don't know if many of us know this, but the Colosseum in Rome was built with much of what was taken from that temple. That's how it was funded at the time in about 79 AD. It was finished, I guess, somewhere in that period of time anyway. But it was ransacked by the Romans, and they took the goodies and sold them and built that Colosseum. What a tremendous difference in the use of a building, can you imagine, from one extreme to the other. And I'm talking about the resources that built the first than the resources that built the second. So they were interested at the end of the age. When is it going to happen? The timing, when, and the very end. What is the sign? And then, I won't read it, but in Acts, we all remember after Jesus Christ was resurrected, the disciples asked the question, will you at this time restore the kingdom to Israel? Now, they asked the question that way because they knew that the kingdom of Israel was under, and there was no kingdom of Israel at the time, but the Israelites were under the dictatorship of Rome, under the authority of Rome. So they wanted to know, when will we be out from under the Romans? And there's going to be a restoration of what we had before Israel was conquered, going back to the time of Jeremiah. We want to know when that's going to take place. Now, we ask them the question, when is the time of the end? I want to keep us to keep in mind the words time and end, because we're going to see that when we follow what happens with the beast, that the word time and end is used quite often. So we'll follow the time of the end events following the beast, as I mentioned. Daniel is a restoration book, and it deals with end time events. We see that from basically the very beginning, but let's go back to Daniel 11. Daniel 11. Daniel 11, and we'll read verses from verse 40 of Daniel 11, and then into chapter 12, a number of verses, just to see the word time and end, and words that typify that same period of time. So chapter 11 of Daniel, which is a long prophecy, but verse 40, at the time of the end. You have a king of the south attacking the king of the north in a counterattack like a whirlwind. And he enters the countries, overwhelms them, and passes through, enters the glorious land. Many countries shall be overthrown. So here we find at the time of the end. And then we could come back to this a little later, I suppose, but let's continue on down to verse 12. At that time, so that's the time of the end. He's talking about what will happen at that time. Michael will stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people. So Michael's been given a job. It's interesting. He's been told, you have to watch over your people. This would be probably Israel, physical Israel, and no doubt, and I think specifically, the people of God. This is the Christians. And there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation. So we see what's going on at the time of the end. Even to that time, and at that time, your people shall be delivered. So it's a time of trouble, a time of deliverance. Everyone who is found written in the book of life will be delivered. Then let's go to just in verse 1, four times we read that word time or end. I guess it's just time there in those verses. Verse 4, you Daniel, concerning the time of the end, shut up the words and seal the book. Okay, the last chapter, Daniel is writing and he's told to finish the book, seal it, you know, put a stamp of it on it. There's nothing else that's going to be added to Daniel until the time of the end. And it's sealed in the sense that individuals who read this book of Daniel will not understand it completely because not enough events have transpired. Because at this time, remember, you have Daniel under the subjection of the Babylonian Empire. And so it's just the first empire. So what's this second empire that's going to come along? What is the third? If people read it back then, they won't have a clue because the history hasn't taken place that's been prophesied here. So Daniel, just shut it up and seal it. Until the time of the end, many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase in the meantime, until the time of the end. Okay, verse 6. And one said to the man clothed in linen, who was above the waters of the river, well, how long now will it take to fulfill all of this? So here's another question concerning, well, when is this? He didn't say, when is the time of the end, but when you say, how long till the fulfillment means the end, doesn't it? So again, the same question. And this is a man clothed in linen. This would be an angel, seemingly, standing there. And again, another question. Now, what we're going to read, and we'll come back to this, but we are given the period of time till the fulfillment. Keep that in mind when you read about these numbers, 1260, 1290, 1335. Basically, it's answering this question of how long till the fulfillment. So if you read, well, it's 1335 days until the fulfillment, you want to know when that time starts. Well, it's 1260 days until the fulfillment of all of this time. Then you know there's 1260 days at the point that they will be speaking of till the fulfillment, till the end. Or 1290. Okay, then in verse 7. Then I heard the man clothed in linen, who was above the waters of the river, when he held up his right hand and his left to heaven, and swore by him who lives forever that it shall be. So we have an answer. How long till the fulfillment? It'll be time, times, and half a time. And that's 3.5 years. We're going to see the term 42 months mentioned, and also 1260 days. Later on, all speaking of that same period. And when the power of the holy people has been completely shattered, so there's something about 3.5 years where the people of God have power. And I know this has been looked at a different way, and the thought years ago was, well, when God's people are in the place of safety, the church will have stopped witnessing. You know, the church will have lost its power at the end time. But we'll find that that's really not what it's saying. It's saying that there's a period of time of 3.5 years where there will be power, and at the end of that time, the power of the holy people will have been completely shattered. All of these things shall be finished. So, answering the question of verse 6, how long shall the fulfillment? Well, from a certain period of time when there's tremendous power on the earth to the time of the fulfillment and Jesus Christ's return is a 3.5 year period. It's all going to be finished. The plan of God for this age will be finished. Okay, then going on in verse 8, although I heard, I did not understand. Naturally, you're just not going to understand because you're back in the time of Babylon. And you just don't know much of anything that's happened in chapter 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, you know, 11, which is a prophecy in detail. You're just not going to know that. Although I heard, I did not understand. Then I said, my Lord, what shall be the end of these things? It's like, well, you gave me an answer, but it wasn't really good enough. Verse 9, and he said, Daniel, go your way. He didn't say, forget about it. He didn't say, it's none of your business. But in one sense, he said, look, Daniel, you're just going to have to wait. For the words are closed up. They're just not going to be understood right now. And sealed till the time of the end. And God would tell him, if I told you more, it still wouldn't do you any good. I could tell you a whole bunch of things, you know, but this is all the detail that you're going to understand, and it won't be until the time of the end that this will be understood. In fact, it won't be until the book of Revelation is written by John, by the inspiration of actually Jesus Christ telling John what was going to happen. Christ was revealing a little bit more at the time of the end to John. And then in verse 11, from the time, okay, a little bit more then, from the time that the daily sacrifice, so I'll give you a little bit more here, from the time that the daily sacrifice is taken away and the abomination of desolation is set up, there's going to be 1,300 or 1,290 days, that is, shall be 1,290 days. So you got 1,260 plus 30 days. So he said, I'll tell you what, I'll give you what's going to happen 30 days before the power of the holy people really hits the world. Because there's going to be a power, something happening for 3.5 years that is very powerful by the people of God. But 30 days before, I'll tell you that there's going to be an abomination that's established. And then, let me give you one more thing, you might say, God, and Daniel's thinking, well, what is that about? Well, let me give you one more thing. He says, blessed is the one who waits and comes to the 1,335 days. Okay, so now you're backing up from the fulfillment of all 1,335 days. And again, it needs nothing, 13, but go your way till the end, till the end. Because Daniel is going to be resurrected at that point. When all of these things are finished, there's going to be a resurrection. Because he says, go your way until that time, meaning, okay, Daniel, then you'll be resurrected. You shall rest and will arise to your inheritance at the end. So he says, go your way till the end. You're going to be resurrected then at that end time, at the end of the day. So we know what it's talking about, that when this period of time is finished, the 1335 point to here, the 1290 point to the same spot, and the 1260 point to the same spot, you're going to be resurrected at the end of that. And these events are going to transpire, but they're a little bit general, especially on that last one. That 45-day period from 1290 to 1335, what in the world is going on there? Well, you're blessed if you can get through that period of time, if you can wait. Okay, so what we have then in these 9 verses, and I think I just covered 9 verses, would be you have over 14 references to the end of time, the when of time, the when of happenings, and that's about it. Just think the time of the end. You have 14 references at least. So from chapter 11 that we just started with, verses 40 through 45, through, and maybe I should go back, let's cover verse 41 through 45. Okay, because I said from one point to another. 40 through 45 and then on through the end of chapter 12, or 12:3 at least. He shall enter the glorious land. This is chapter 11, verse 41. Enters the glorious land. Many countries shall be overthrown. These will escape. Edom, Moab, the prominent people of Ammon. We know of Ammon, Jordan. So, well, those people in Jordan are going to escape when the king of the north counterattacks and comes down all the way to the glorious land. That is all the way down to Israel. There's one country at least that is fairly safe to be in. I'm not going to move there right now, but some people have moved to different spots around the world thinking that's a place of safety. I always tell people, don't go to Montana. It's the biggest crater in almost the world. There may be some that are bigger, but it's just gigantic. And when that explodes, Denver's not safe. Kansas City's not safe. The entire West, if that really explodes. Now, if you go, how many have been to Tetons and walked near the, have seen the geyser that used to, you know, spit at a fairly regular rate, you know, of every, what, 3 hours or something like that. But Yellowstone, yes. Thank you very much. Every once in a while, it's a, my mother called it Alzheimer's. That's what she would say. Yellowstone National Park. How many have been to Yellowstone National Park? So quite a few have. And the guys are there twice. Now, when you're there, you can walk, and you're walking right over lava that is as hot as can be. You don't want to fall in there. You're going to melt. And people who think that you should move to Montana and or the Tetons of Wyoming, or Great Falls or Billings, you know, this beautiful prairie country where all the deer and the antelope play, Gene Autry style. You know, it's like, you don't want to go there. You just don't. But there are safe places at the end time. Anyway, so he stretches out his hand against the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. So you can see where the attack is going to be. As the king of the north goes to the glorious land, it's going to extend all the way down to Egypt and Ethiopia. Power over the treasures of gold, silver, precious things of Egypt. Also the Libyans, Ethiopians shall follow at his heel. News from the east and the north, from the east and the north, from the east and the north. Now we might say from the northeast, but it doesn't say that. News from the east and from the north shall trouble him. And we look at that as the areas of Russia, Iran, no doubt, possibly we could say China, and the eastern powers of Japan, India, we're looking at Cambodia, Laos, any of those countries, Vietnam, of course. We're looking at all of those areas where they have come together and are going to attack the beast, or at least trouble is going to come and the beast is going to have to go over there and settle it. And that's called basically Armageddon, you know, the Battle of Armageddon, when the beast finally turns against Jesus Christ. Verse 45, he shall plant the tents of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain. Yet he shall come to his end, and no one will help him. And so we'll read later on how, why no one can help him. So in this section here, just to summarize, we have a king of the south, we have a king of the north, we have an attack by the south and a counterattack by the north. We have the north conquering the Arab countries. We have the north conquering the Holy Land. We have the greatest time of trouble ever. We have God's people who are going to be delivered. We have bad news from the north and the east. And we have basically three resurrections talked about because of the language here. This scenario begins a time where there's a first resurrection, and there will be followed quite a bit later, a second resurrection and a third resurrection. So it's the time of the end. Daniel 2, verse 40 and 45. Daniel 2. Again, we're following this beast power, as we'll later see that it's called. Daniel 2. And according to my stopwatch, I have been speaking 24 minutes and 12 seconds. Thank you, my dear. This is a bad idea. Okay, Daniel 2. No, it's a good idea. I tell all the guys, you know, time yourself. Daniel 2. In Daniel 2, it's a summary of a huge, long period of time. Remember, Daniel is a restoration book. So we start with Israel, house of Israel, house of Judah, taken into captivity as nations, God's people. And the restoration of them is going to transpire many years later, where you see the restoration of a kingdom called God's kingdom. Only it won't be physical, it's going to be spiritual. And we'll just cut to the chase here and come down to verse 45, but you do have four kingdoms, and one of those kingdoms has 10 toes, okay? One of the kingdoms has 10 toes. And verse 44, let's start there. In the days of these kings, so plural, so there's going to be kings at the end of this time. In the days of these kings. And that's important because there's 10 toes, and the word kings is important because we're going to read what those kings will be doing at the end time. That's why it's so important. We can talk about beasts and beast power, but it's not just one king, so to speak. The days of these kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. The kingdom shall not be left to other people. It shall break in pieces and consume all of these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. So this is the time of the end then. This is the time of the end when these kings will exist. And it's the fourth empire. The fourth empire, and there's not going to be any empire after it. That's why God says that all of them will be destroyed, meaning it's one image. Remember, it's all from one source, one main kingdom, so to speak, different rises and falls. But it's one image, one statue, and I think it looked like Nebuchadnezzar. I think it's a dream that he saw. From the top of the head to the bottom of his toes, it's all one. And in the days of the last 10 kings, everything is destroyed. Revelation 17 then. Let's go, since we have kings. And we're following this this power. And there are kings that go with this power. Revelation 17, 12 through 19. Revelation. And Daniel would not have known the rises and the falls, you know, and of the Roman Empire. He would not have known of that. He would not have known there was going to be a Napoleon coming along as part of it. And Alexander, well, he wouldn't have known that either. But as far as the Roman Empire, he would not have known. And Hitler, he wouldn't have understood any of that. Revelation 17, 12 through 19. Revelation 17. And the 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings who received no kingdom as yet, but they receive authority for 1 hour as kings with a beast. These are of one mind, and they will give their power and authority to the beast. These will make war with the Lamb. Now, when we read that, we know that the kings that are being talked about in Daniel 2 are these same kings. They have to be, because Jesus Christ comes along and destroys. He's the major rock that breaks in pieces that entire image. So you have these 10 kings, just like the 10 toes that are kings. They give their power and authority to the beast. So you have the 10 kings as an entity. You have the beast as an entity. These will make war with the Lamb. And the Lamb will overcome them, for he is the Lord of lords, King of kings, and those who are with him are called, chosen, and faithful. And he said, the waters which you saw where the harlot sits, so you have the 10 kings, you have the beast, or, well, it does call him a beast, doesn't it? Then you have a harlot. The waters which you saw where the harlot sits are peoples, multitudes, nations, and tongues. Now, this harlot sits on the beast, guides the beast, and guides the 10 kings. So the 10 kings are going to destroy the harlot. Now, we don't talk about this section too much. We kind of, in prophecy, we generalize quite a bit and don't get into the detail in this section here. But you see that the 10 horns, in verse 16, which you saw on the beast, they will hate the harlot. So you've got a beast, you've got 10 horns, you've got a harlot that's riding this beast. So just picture this woman, and I think all of us have seen the pictures, right? So you got this picture, the harlot riding a beast that has 10 horns. So you got a harlot, so it's a being, it's an entity that controls the beast and controls the 10 kings. 10 kings just hate the harlot that is riding them. Wants to get rid of the control over them. So the 10 kings destroy the harlot, which is Babylon. They destroy Babylon. no longer is Babylon going to be able to ride or reign over and guide and direct the beast or the ten kings. So the ten kings destroy the harlot so they can give power to the beast. That is as clear as pure water. It just is. There's nothing muddy about that at all. That's what happens. The ten kings, verse 16, which you saw on the beast, these will hate the harlot and make her desolate and naked, eat her flesh and burn her with fire, for God has put it into their hearts to fulfill his purpose to be of one mind and to give their kingdom to the beast. But you got to get rid of the whore. You have to get rid of the harlot to do that. So we're following the beast now, and so when is all this going to take place? Let's go to Revelation 13, because now you've got this beast who's free from the harlot. And now you get into some periods of time that have been mentioned back in the book of Daniel. Revelation 13, verses 4 and 5. I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea. Now, on the last Holy Day on Trumpets, we went to, was it Revelation 9, I believe, and we read where you have power given to the beast for 5 months. And in my mind, it's like, well, the tribulation's already passed, so the time that we're going to read right now, by the time you speak of the Revelation 9, you've got it well after the tribulation has started. And you think, well, wait a minute, the beast, how can the beast be loosed later on? Well, if you, I was reading the Amplified, because I knew there had to be a problem with tense. Past participle is not a tense that was used in the Greek, where you have had taken place. You know, it's she left me. She had gone. Did she leave me right now, or had she gone? We use a past participle with it, like it's way back. It's a while ago that this happened. So when you read later on where the angel comes down to the bottomless pit and releases the beast, it had already taken place. It's going back in time and saying this is the same beast that you found released earlier on. So I saw a beast rising out of the sea, seven heads, ten horns. And on his horns are ten crowns, and on his heads a blasphemous name. So the beast which I saw was like a leopard. Dragon gives him his power, his throne, and great authority. So it is Satan the devil who does this. And then you talk about the mortally wounded heads. So basically a deadly wound is healed, meaning there's been a beast that has risen before and died. In fact, it's been there throughout history. The same beast that goes back into the bottomless pit sometimes is sealed up and then let loosed. So anyway, you have basically an empire that is healed. You have a beast on the scene again with that same spirit, I believe, the same spirit. And they worship the dragon who gave authority to the beast, and they worship the beast, saying, who is like the beast, who is able to make war with him? So after the ten kings give their authority to the beast, we find no one is able to battle against them. Who is able to war against this beast? He was given a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and he was given authority to continue for 42 months, to continue for 42 months. Now, that doesn't mean that he's only in power for 42 months, but this is a very important time. He's given power to continue for another 42 months till what? Till he's destroyed. Because at the end of this time, this beast and these 10 kings are going to be destroyed. And we could jump ahead to the end of Revelation 19, but we know that the beast and false prophet and the kings are going to be destroyed with Christ's coming. That's when they're destroyed. So the entities we're reading about right now will be living through this last period, this 1260 days, these 42 months, 3.5 years, living all the way up to the return of Jesus Christ, when they will be destroyed. Let's see if I had one other scripture that I wanted to fit in here at this time. Verse 11. But 42 months is important because now we're thinking back, well, now how long? How long a time? What's going to happen? What has to take place before the end, the time of the very end? Verse 11. Then I saw another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb and spoke like a dragon. He exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence. All the authority, meaning the first beast, gives power and authority to him and causes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. He performs great signs so that he even makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. He deceives those, so it's great signs. And think of this now, because we're going to turn to another scripture that tells us that this same one is going to be destroyed by the brightness of Christ's coming. The exact same one. He deceives those who dwell on the earth by those signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who was wounded by the sword and lived. Then he was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. And then there's that mark, and we can talk about then, no one may buy or sell, so you have an economic system that is involved in all of this. Okay, so second beast is the false prophet that promotes. Some people have very poor writing. Can't even read my own writing. But the second beast promotes the first beast and deceives the world with great signs. People believe when they see miracles and signs. And this is what we have to beware of. And also, brethren, remember that one can bring forth signs and speak of prophecies that will come to pass. But if they do not believe in and teach God's law, don't believe them. That's basically what you have to look at. The signs are virtually nothing to think about, nothing to be impressed with. What they must do is be teaching God's law. And we know that there will be a couple that will be teaching God's law. Now, keep your finger, please, in Revelation and just take a quick look at 2 Thessalonians. Because in 2 Thessalonians, you have in chapter 2, notice coming down to verse 8. The lawless one, it tells you right there, don't believe him. Don't believe him. He's lawless. The lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord will consume with the breath of his mouth. So we know again, this is the end time, and destroy with the brightness of his coming. And again, we could take a look at Revelation 19 if we have the time and see that the beast and false prophet who deceives with great signs is the one who is destroyed by Jesus Christ. So it's speaking of the same one. The lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord will consume. And by the way, this is also at the end of that 42-month period. Remember, the beast has power for 42 months. So you already know when to start counting, if you're able to do that, unless God puts us in a coma and we can't count. But you know that when these things start happening, there's only so much time. The lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord will consume with the breath of his mouth, and destroy with the brightness of his coming. The coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan, remember? They worship Satan the devil, with all power, signs, and lying wonders. That's a false prophet. With all unrighteous deception among those who perish because they did not receive the love of the truth that they might be saved. And for this reason, God will send them strong delusions that they should believe this lie. So it is a lie. But it's the same one we're talking about in Revelation 13. Okay, let's go to Revelation 11 then. Now you have this beast, 42 months. So what's happening in Revelation 11? Revelation 11, verse 2, talks about leaving out a court which is outside the temple, and do not measure it, for it's been given to the Gentiles. They will tread the holy city. So now we're seeing something happening at the end time. The beast is alive continues for 42 months. And here we have now a city that is going to be tread upon. That is the holy city, Jerusalem, underfoot for how long? 42 months. So the period of time that the beast has all of this power, joined how long before by those 10 kings, I'm not sure, but it's that same period of time, 42 months, and the city of Jerusalem will be under the power of the Gentiles, not the Israelites. City of Jerusalem right now overall is under the power of the Israelites. But at the end time, it'll be totally in the power of the Palestinians or Arabs, however you wish to describe them, for that same period of time, 42 months. And notice, now I will give power to my two witnesses, and they will prophesy 1,260 days. Does that remind you of Daniel? So that's also 42 months. Clothed in sackcloth. They will be humble. They will not be saying, look at me, I'm going to be one of the two witnesses. They may be like Jonah, who said, oh no, not me, I'm going to jump in the nearest ship that I can find and take off to the most remote part of the entire world. So they will not be ones who are individuals who promote themselves at all. These are the two olive trees and the two lampstands standing before the church, God of the earth, and we could give a little bit more information on that, but that's in Revelation chapter 1, I believe, toward the end, where it talks about the lampstands and what they represent concerning the two churches that they represent. And if anyone wants to harm them, they can't. They'll be killed. Verse 6, now here we come to a word that we saw in Daniel 11 and 12, basically Daniel 12. These have power to shut heaven so that no rain falls in the days of their prophecy. So Daniel asked, well, you know, when is all this going to happen? And he said, well, it's going to take 3.5 years and the power of the holy people will be shattered. Now, what two men are going to have more power than any apostles have ever had? It's going to be the two witnesses. And the question is, do they have power? And the answer is yes. Is their power shattered at the beginning of the 42 months, the 3.5 years, or is their power shattered a little bit later on? Well, when you read this, you'll see they have power to shut heaven, so no rain falls in the days of their prophecies. We haven't seen that since what, Elijah? I don't know of any prophet that has done anything like that since that time. So that no rain falls in the days of their prophecies. They have power. Do you think that power is shattered if they have power in these last 42 months? They have power over waters to turn them to blood and to strike the earth with all plagues as often as they desire. Now when they finish, and remember it says after all the power is shattered, then it's finished. Okay, that's the same term back in the book of Daniel. It is finished. So before the testimony, the witness of God is finished on this earth, you have to have the two witnesses die. They have to be killed. And I don't believe anybody's going to have power to torture them. I wouldn't think so here. If anybody tries to touch them, they'll be killed. But there will be a time right at the very end, right before the return of Christ, where these two men will be killed. Now, who's going to kill them? When they finish their testimony, the beast that ascends out of the bottomless pit, and the beast has been out for not just 5 months. The beast has been out for at least 42 months. That's what we read in Revelation 13. So it's that same period of time, and you're going to have the beast and the kings trying to get rid of the two witnesses. It's kind of like Pharaoh back in the time when God was delivering Israel from Egypt. And the Pharaoh was just absolutely irritated. It's like, let's put these men down. What are these guys doing? Let's get rid of them. What can we do? You know, and it's like, can't do anything. The beast cannot touch the two witnesses. And it's all over the news. The entire world is going to be looking at their phone, you know, and watching TV on their phone. If we think, well, what's another 10 years going to bring? If it would be 10 years, there's going to be so much more technology and immediate stuff. You know, it's not a watch for somebody who stole a vehicle or kidnapped a girl. It's going to be an alert on your phone. It's like, look what's happening in Jerusalem now, because that's going to be all the time. In fact, what's happening here in Revelation, or what's spoken of in Revelation 11, is that when these people die, well, let's see what happens. In verse, that their dead bodies will be in the street. Then those from the peoples, verse 9, tribes, tongues, nations will see their dead bodies 3.5 days. How do they see them? Well, we know. We can watch TV. We can watch our phone. Not allow their dead bodies to be put into the graves. And those who dwell on the earth will rejoice over them. Those who dwell on the earth are going to be all over the earth. Finally, these two men are dead, will make merry and send gifts to one another, and it's not even Christmas time. You know, that's what they're going to do. Because these two prophets tormented those who dwell on the earth. Talk about power. So it is a tremendous amount of power. So that's what's happening then. The Gentiles conquer Jerusalem for 42 months. It's all of this time the Gentiles have power over Jerusalem. The people of God are in a place of safety. And there's power by those two witnesses. It's mentioned twice. They finish their witness and they're killed by the beast. Okay, then what happens? Well, let's pick it up in, we can see there's a resurrection. Okay, after 3.5 days, these men are resurrected, or 3 days. Yeah, 3.5 days. These men are resurrected. And you have this huge earthquake, and then you have the return of Jesus Christ, verse 15 of chapter 11, right? The return of Jesus Christ, seventh angel sounds. Okay, now, chapter 19, I mentioned this a couple times, but just so we know that this is the time of the end, this is what it's talking about. Chapter 19, verse 11, I saw heaven opened, and behold, a white horse, and he who sat on him was called Faithful and True, and in righteousness he judges and makes war. So this is Christ's return. Then in verse 19, I saw the beast and the kings of the earth and their armies. Now we know there's 10 kings with a beast, and if we had a little bit more time, which we don't, we could see that the kings from the north and from the east who troubled the beast power, and the beast goes after them to make war at Armageddon, before they can even do that, because God tells us that if there's not an intervention at this time, the whole earth is going to be destroyed. That's what he says in Matthew chapter 24. If there's not intervention by Christ, the entire earth will be destroyed. So I saw the beast and the kings of the earth, both sets of kings, and their armies gathered together to make war against him who sat on the horse and against his army. And it almost seems in Psalm 2 where they're counseling together on how to destroy Christ at his return. So however long this is going to take, I don't know, but it's not going to be too long. How can you fight, you know, the alien from outer space? Some will look upon him as that. The beast is captured, with him the false prophet, who works signs in his presence. So you know exactly who he's talking about. You know exactly how long they were at work deceiving, by which he deceived those who received the mark of the beast and those who worshipped the image. These two were cast alive into the lake of fire, burning with brimstone. And they suffered forever and ever and ever. And the answer is, well, they had demons, and the demons are going to be tormented forever and ever and ever. I always go to Revelation 16 to show that these are spirits that are dwelling in these entities. They're the ones that are going to be in continual torment forever. Okay, so you got a beast, 10 kings, false prophet. You have these entities, and the beast and false prophet are thrown into the lake of fire. Okay, let's back up to the 42-month time as we close down now to the last 9 minutes and 41 seconds. In Revelation 11, there were three important points, and we basically just read them, so I won't go through them again. But in verses 2 and 3, you have 42 months and 1,260 days. You have the second point, the Gentiles tread down the holy city for a period, it says, according to also Revelation 13, 42 months. Gentiles tread down the city. This is called a holy city also. It is a holy city that is tread down. That's stomped on, basically. It's controlled by. And that third point was there are two witnesses that have plenty of power. So let's go back to Daniel 11. Or maybe just because of time, I'll refer to it. I think you all have a good memory. I don't see that any of you were sleeping at the beginning of the sermon, nor at the end. But remember, the king plants, the king of the north plants his tents between the sea and the holy city, Mount Zion. That's where he's going to plant his tent. And the question in chapter 12, verse 4 and 6 is, how long? How long? How long will he be there? And in verse 7 of Daniel 12, it was, well, till the end it's going to be 1,260 days where he is treading that city, basically, that same period of time. And the power is shattered. The power of the church is shattered. So it's 1,260 days, and in verse 8, what is the end? We saw the word time of the end mentioned about verse 9, and then in verse 11 we saw 1,290 days, and we'll go to Luke 11 here in a moment, 1,290 days, so you got 1,260 days where you know Jerusalem is finally taken over. It doesn't say 1,290 days that Jerusalem is tread down by the Gentiles. It says 1,260 days. And also you have the 1,290 days in verse 11 of Daniel 11. It's a period when the daily sacrifice or the abomination of desolation is set up to the time of the end. And then you have verse 12 of Daniel 12, 1,335 days where you are blessed if you can wait through that period. So let's go to Luke 21. Let's go to Luke 21. In Luke 21, verses 5 through 7, Luke 21, verses 5 through 7, some spoke of the temple, how it was adorned with beautiful stones and donations. He said, as for these things, Luke 21, verse 6, as for these things which you see, the days will come in which not one stone shall be left upon another that shall not be overthrown. And they asked, Teacher, what is the sign? So he says, well, you know, there's going to be a lot taking place. There's going to be wars, rumors of wars, floods in the Carolinas. There's going to be, you know, I think I mentioned the other day, there's 160 active volcanoes, 161 in the United States. So that all of these things are going to be happening throughout the world. That's not the time of the end. Nations are going to be fighting against nations. Only six nations right now aren't fighting with somebody else. There's going to be famines and pestilences, that is. And you're going to be persecuted. Therefore, you know, he tells them what to do here. And you're going to be betrayed. In your patience, possess you your souls. If you can wait, in your patience, possess you your souls. If you can wait 1,335 days, when something is going to happen at that 1,335 days, in your patience, possess you your soul. Waiting 1,335, you have to wait a little longer when the actual end comes. So, verse 20 now. When you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know that its desolation is near. Okay, so how long is the desolation going to take place? And the answer is the city's going to be tread down. And I'm not going to speak of the abomination that causes desolation. There's something that's going to cause the desolation of that city. But whatever the case, 1260 days. But when you see the city surrounded, its desolation is near. And that's the, 1290, wasn't it? 1290, when you have the desolation period. So I'll back up a little bit here. City is tread down for 1260, but the desolation takes place 1290. So when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, what do you think is going to happen at that time? Well, 13, I say, and we can bet on it because I always like to take bets that I pay off when after Christ comes. Because then I'll pay you in gold. How much gold do you want? And then Christ is going to say, Sarge, you know, you have a lot of bets to pay, and I'm not giving you any money. You thought you'd get a lot of money to pay off these debts. Just kidding. Well, when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know that its desolation is near. 1290. So this would be, you got 45 days before the desolation is near. That's as close as I can come to just understanding what this prophecy is about based on what I see with all the times that we have mentioned. That's as close that I can see. And God did say we would understand. And it's not like we haven't. We've always looked at this and understood the tribulation was going to be 3.5 years. And also we know that during this period of time, you want to be in a place of safety. And we understand also that that's 3.5 years. I think it mentions in Revelation 3, if I'm not mistaken, that there's going to be a period of time. I'd have to go back and look at it. You know, you always start to second-guessing yourself when you think, well, is that Revelation 3? And does it mention that number of days? But whatever the case, the people of God, if they're not Laodicean, if they're not lethargic, are going to be in a place of safety. And notwithstanding the fact that there will be martyrs. Woe to those who are pregnant and to those who are nursing babies. There will be great distress in the land and wrath upon this people. Go back to Daniel 12 and verse 1. Great distress, a time unlike any other on the face of this earth. And they will fall by the edge of the sword and be led away captive into all nations. Jerusalem is going to be taken, and half the city is going to be taken into captivity, Zechariah 14. Half the city will be taken into captivity at this time. Some have said, well, what does this mean? You know, there'll be two in the field. One will be taken. One will be left. I don't know of any other scripture that would fulfill it except the captivity of Jerusalem itself, because it is talking about Jerusalem in Zechariah 14. They'll fall by the edge of the sword, led away captive into all nations, and Jerusalem will be trampled by the Gentiles. So that's the city is tread, same terminology, until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. When Jesus Christ comes and smashes that image completely and takes over from that point on, there'll be no such things as the time of the Gentiles. The restoration of Israel, spiritual Israel in this case, will take place. And there'll be no more times of the Gentiles, times of just the nations. Everybody's going to be converted after this time. And then, verse 25, backing up a little bit, there's going to be signs. You'll know it's coming because sixth seal tells us when all of this is going to take place. Signs in the sun, moon, stars, distress of the nations, men's hearts failing from fear. So what do we want to do? What do we want to make sure of? What does this mean to us? Because I don't think I need to go into any other details here. This is most the Bible gives us. But Luke 21 tells us, verses 5 through 7, a little bit of what we should watch for, and that is, watch yourself. Basically, watch yourself. We know what signs there are to watch for, But if we're a little bit late, like the 10 virgins, if we're one of the five virgins, it doesn't matter what we know. You know, when we go to knock and we don't have God's Spirit, it's going to be too late. So we have to do, well, I have about five things that I'll sum up with here without even going to Scripture, because I really don't have Scripture with it. It's just from what we've read in Hebrews, what we've read in the prophecies throughout the Bible and the warnings to God's people. We have a love that is not to wax cold based on society around us. Actually, there's just four things that I have here. Watch that our love does not wax cold, because society is going to be so lawless and we can get calloused because of immorality. And we can, you know, the longer a person sees violence, sees immoral acts, the more hardened we get. And that's that love waxing cold, getting hard. Cares of life. Be careful that that doesn't take you away from, as we heard in the sermonette, Bible study and prayer. We have to be consistent. We have to renew God's Spirit daily. The Sabbath is mentioned in Hebrews 10. So much more, as the day comes, make sure that you go to church, is what it says. Make sure you assemble at church. The closer you see time. Every week gets closer. Every single week. And I've seen so many signs now, so much happening in the world, as most of us who are in our 70s, 60s have seen happening, that you know, you can see the prophecies are coming to pass. There's just no question about it. What God predicted is coming to pass. Germany is there. And for those people after World War II who said Germany's not going to rise again, I think if they came up from the dead right now, they would be shocked, because Germany has risen and it was so destroyed, nobody thought that would ever rise again. So the prophecies are coming true. The beast is rising. It just is. So the closer time gets, the more we assemble with God's people. We need each other. And then don't neglect our salvation. Just neglect. Total, complete neglect. We can lose out on salvation. So that's as much as we can talk about today. There's always time to go into detail. There's a whole sermon in Hebrews on the five warnings that a sermon could be given on. But as we are about to keep the Feast of Tabernacles and think about the coming of Jesus Christ, that should spur us on to want even more so to be in the kingdom of God. And as we see that these prophecies are there, God predicted it. He said this is going to come to pass, and you can see it happening. It's even more truth as to, I need to be on the ball. I can't let down. Football games have been lost. Maybe not by Roland Tide, or whatever it's called, but football games have been lost in the last quarter, in the last couple minutes, because the other team has let down. Races have been lost by men who have let up at the end of the race just in the last 10 yards. And it's just amazing. If you let up before the race is finished, you lose out. So let's make sure that we are zealous right till the very end. Have a good feast. I'll be here for the Day of Atonement. I hope to see you then.